Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more.
I don't know if you sabotaged me this. I don't know if you sabotaged me this time or not.
I did not. That's our original intro.
That one off the dome completely.
Okay, nice. I like it. Did a good job.
I did a good job of remembering the thing that I have said a million times.
Yes, Handsome Boys, how you guys doing out there? I have a cold. I apologize for whatever weird voice things I happen to say during this that sound weird or whatever. Tonally, I am fighting off illness, and there's an angry cat in the room with me, so we'll see how that goes as well. But otherwise, we got
is haunted, so I apologize for that.
We got a good week of comics to talk about. A jam-packed week of comics to talk about. We also have one of Eric's favorite comics, manga, as they say in Japan.
Or manga, if you're dumb.
Or manga, if you're stupid. Battle Angel Alita, the first roughly half that we're going to be discussing. We're going to analyze Eric. We're going to see, talk about why he likes the things he likes. Because I'm starting to see trends in his favorite things.
I cannot wait for us to analyze. Let me get on the couch.
I don't think it'll be that deep. I think it'll be more like it has cool machine shit in it. I don't think it'll be that complicated. With the amount of, we got a jam packed week of weekly floppies. So let's start the show. Let's get in some weekly floppies. Wait for it.
Did you notice I cup my hand around my headphone?
Because that's how you listen better.
Oh, yeah, that's how that works.
That's much better. Yeah, yeah. We got a whole bunch of comic books in Weekly Floppies. This is a very big week of releases. I added several to our normal slate, and it still didn't cover everything. But I think we got a good spread of interesting things to discuss, so I think that's all I'm really too concerned about. First up, our lone DC book of the week is Superman, number 38. The last issue of the first Jeff Johns, John Romita Jr. arc with Superman and Odysseus, or the hell his name
Ulysses,
is?
Ulysses, not Odysseus. It's Ulysses.
There you go. That's how much I remember him.
I was going to say, it's okay. They're you know, similar characters, or are they the same person? I don't even remember.
Yeah, we've missed a couple issues in this, but hey, Eric, who would have guessed they ended up fighting?
They look like they're kissing on the cover.
Well, if only that was the actual comic we were reading instead of them just punching each other for a bit.
I know. Where's my gay Superman comic?
That was, I think you need to delve deeper into Authority. I think
that is literally gay. My gay Superman comic, isn't it? Or at least as close as we're going to get.
Yeah. What the big thing that's been in the news this week has been Superman has a new power. We haven't seen it since I think Heat Vision was the last time he got a new power, which is in the 60s at some point. Mm-hmm. Now he can like explode himself
because
he becomes a super bomb.
Yeah, because of course.
Of course, but he becomes vulnerable for 24 hours. He becomes a regular Joe, normal guy, vulnerable.
Which is an interesting enough development, but I don't know. Are you feeling similarly underwhelmed by this?
Yeah, I don't. It's okay.
Yeah, I think okay
it's
is
fine.
About how I would describe it. I don't know why I actually really like the whole Daily Planet stuff in this. I don't know why that works for me, and I don't know. It falls flat, and this was a story that we were both enjoying some time ago. So I don't know. It's not like it's bad. I just
I don't know. I expected it to go here. I just had hoped it wouldn't, that it wouldn't just be a fist fight at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it became. Like, having Superman having him, I mean, send him off somewhere else to fight. I think that's more interesting than having him be, hey, another dude that's in a jail.
Yeah.
That Superman, yeah. It's not that exciting. Like, the whole thing with Jimmy Olsen at the end is the most interesting. I think that's why you,
yes,
you said you liked, no, it. That's exactly by far the most interesting thing that happens in this comic.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman has a sort of new costume that he reveals to Jimmy.
Yes.
I don't really feel any different than I did about the last one. It's fine, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why his sleeves go over, like,
yeah, over part like of his hand.
It just looks like he has really, like, his tailor didn't measure him correctly or something.
Yes, that is what I see.
I mean, I still like John Romita Jr.'s art. I know you're not.
No, I like this. I dislike this the most of anything we've read by him. I think the backgrounds and things look nice, mm-hmm. but I can't abide by these figures. It just doesn't work for me. A lot of these fighting scenes just look really rushed, and the faces look really naive, and it just doesn't look quite pulled off correctly. It looks like it's 98% colorist, and
I don't.
That's just
why
lazy.
Why does Batman have his mask on?
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just too private.
I don't know. I wish he was wasn't wearing his mask. It seems like they know who they are. He's in the Batcave. Does he just wears his mask all the time when he's not?
Well, here's the thing. If he wasn't wearing his mask, you would have to pick up from context that it was Batman.
That he's Batman? Okay. Yeah,
you wouldn't be able to
like
tell from
the
big
giant
logo
bat
on his chest. Yeah,
he
would not be able to tell.
Are you a bi, Eric?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
There's no real reason to buy this if you just want to. If you're one of those nerd collectors, you know, like, oh, this is Superman's new power. You know, I guess that is a solid reason to buy it, because maybe people will care about this in a decade. I can't give a kitty poot about this. I don't care. I wished I hadn't read it. This
Ooh,
is coming
okay.
from a storyline that I was enjoying.
Yeah, I think I have to side with do not buy as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are obviously, if you're already reading this, you probably don't care what we think. but it's not on the, like, as an issue alone, it's certainly not worth purchasing. So I'm going to do not buy. Double do not buy, Superman number 38. Next up, the first of three indie books of the week. And the first of two number one indie books. It is Cluster number one. Written by Ed Brisson, illustrated by Damian Cachero, colors by Michael Garland, a beautiful cover by James Stocco, which mm-hmm. was the first thing that caught my eye.
Yeah, that'll get you to buy things.
I don't know who did the lettering. Doesn't say.
It says designer.
Designer is Kelsey Dietrich, so I imagine that's the letterer as well.
It's possible.
This is the basic premise of this is we're future dystopia kind of idea, but. If you are sentenced to life, you can instead take 15 years of military service, basically. You get dumped on this alien planet and you fight aliens for 15 years or until you die. That is the very rough elevator pitch.
So to me, this is like Bitch Planet meets Copperhead with elements of Shudder and, the comic Shudder. And, what's that movie that everyone both loves and hates?
Starship Troopers?
That's the one.
I love Starship Troopers.
You don't also hate it?
No, I don't hate it. I do love it. It's not a good movie, but it is a lot of fun.
There you go. That's the statement I'm trying to make.
Yeah, it definitely has a lot of that in here. A lot of, we're on this weird desert planet and there's aliens. Although there's also aliens fighting with us. So mm-hmm. obviously we've come to the point where, you know, we're in the future far enough that we've met other life forms, and some of them are friendly, some of them are not. There's the main protagonist is female, so that's another indie book with a mm-hmm. lead female protagonist, which of course I think we're both in favor of. What do you think about this comic, Eric? I don't know. Going in, I was like, the premise isn't necessarily super interesting, but what about, no. Did you think it executed it well enough to make it worth it?
I feel like it's, maybe not mixing its metaphors is the correct thing to say, but I feel like it's blending too many genres and not doing any one thing particularly well.
Mm.
Like, I feel like it should have, at least for the first issue, maybe tried to pare down a little bit. I don't know. It doesn't really hit any emotional notes for me. It's all trying to wow me with concept and not really wowing me with a whole lot of execution. Does that make sense?
I understand what you mean. It does a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of stuff happens. I don't necessarily think mean that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I do agree that you do get kind of a picture of this this Samara. You kind of get an idea of what she is and her background and stuff, but not a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was empathetic for her, but not nearly as much as I probably should be.
Yes. You feel no real emotional attachment to any characters.
Like, I'm sure, I don't know. I think there's enough promise here.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the art.
I do like this art. This is, it's an odd sort of stylization, but it's, you know, it's got good energy. It's got a hip look to it. The colorist is, pulling out some mood and atmosphere in it, and it's pretty strong. I'm digging it. I don't think necessarily every single drawing is like a virtuoso drawing, but it's certainly strong, and it'll provide like a unique sort of look at this world. I like it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would say I can see potential in this.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would give it a couple issues and then see where it's at, and then officially jump on board or get off, you know. So I'm like a buy with like a mush meter two, and then
I could go mushier, but I think I'll just be your second on this one.
Okay, so we're a double buy, a little mush meter two officially, but I it's solid enough we can check back in on it in issues two and three, and then see where it's going, the direction. It certainly could be better than that first issue. That first issue foretells.
You should next up. You should just read Bitch Planet and Copperhead instead.
I mean, yeah, I certainly would suggest both of those before you buy this one.
Mm-hmm.
If your budget allows for two comics with female protagonists and alien worlds, go for those two first.
Yeah.
Next up, Eric. This is an occasion.
It is
momentous occasion. This is the first time we have read Spawn for the podcast. The first time Spawn has been available digitally. Now you guys mm-hmm. can go out to the and buy all 250 issues of it. It is all available digitally. Issue 250 came out this week, and that is the issue we are reviewing. I do not know where the hell the credits page is on this thing. I don't know if I ever saw it.
It's in hell.
Yeah, for a Spawn book, there's not a lot of Spawn in this, actually.
No, there's a lot of talking.
There is a lot of talking. You are right.
Lot of talking.
What is your experience with Todd? Not with Todd. Might as well be with Todd McFarlane. But with Spawn in general. Here, I found the credits. Let me read it. Todd McFarlane, writer. How do you say a guy's name where it says Simon, but there's a Z in the middle?
Simon
Kudransky with John Boy doing one page. Our buddy John Boy. I'm serious. So it says FCO Placentia doing colors, Tom Orzechowski on letters, and Todd McFarlane doing the cover art.
There we go.
What is your experience with Spawn? How much Spawn have you read?
Obviously not hundreds of them, but it was a thing back in the 90s. That it mm-hmm. was the biggest book in the world at the time. Everyone was talking about it, and we were casual kids, comic fans, you know? Mm-hmm. We read Spider-Man and whatever we could find. Mostly Spider-Man and New Warriors. So nothing advanced, nothing adult, no Vertigo, you know, absolutely nothing DC. It was basic stuff, and then we saw this and we're like, wow, this is adult and gory and dark, and they're talking about hell and monsters and all of this crazy stuff. I don't look back on it fondly.
Right.
It's one of the bigger things about the 90s that, I don't know, it colors a lot of my opinion of most of the work that came out then. I imagine you're much the same.
I actually didn't. I've read a little bit of Spawn, and of course I know the basics. I think most comic fans from that era.
Yes.
I mean, even if you barely read it, you know, hey, yeah, Spawn, it's, you know, the guy dies, and he comes back, and he has demon powers, and he's, there's the clown, you know, Violator.
Do you know what one thing that is kind of weird to me?
What?
Like, it was, like, renowned as being, I don't know why, but being progressive, because the main character, Al Simmons, is a black man.
Yeah.
Even though he looks like he's made out of hamburger when he takes his mask off.
Right.
There is not a single person of color in this whole book. I was looking for this, and I did not find one. And that, like, the only reason I noticed that is because after everything else that we read nowadays, it seems really weird.
Well, to be fair, the original Spawn does show up on, like, the last page.
Yeah, I know.
There's he's a person of color, even though he does look like hamburger. You're he does look from like that. Hamburger. He has a giant sword for some reason. Like you
totally
said, it
looks
very
badass. Come on.
It's very wordy. There is a lot of exposition in this, and I've not read Spawn in a long time, so I don't know if every issue is like this. I do know that this has been a big push. You know, it's a big momentous issue. You know, it's digital available mm-hmm. digital, and Al Simmons is back in this one. So maybe they're trying to get a lot of, like, stuff that's happened in the meantime into new readers. But it's not great when that no. there's so much words and not, they don't, it doesn't need to be that many.
It
you can
really
do
seems
the same thing
like,
with a lot less.
No, it really seems like they're trying to, like, I don't want to jump straight to trying too hard, but it's like they're trying to make you think it's an adult comic by making it really super wordy. Like, this is grown up and like literature, and there's a trillion words in it, and it's like I don't know. There's a lot of rehashing. It's not really neat storytelling.
No,
like you can easily skim this and know what's going on without. I mean. There's two characters from the original series, Sam and Twitch. They're investigating yes. weird stuff that is really dumb and makes no sense.
Yeah.
There's a shitload of bugs and bats mm-hmm. and things.
Yep. Yep.
And it's creating the end of the world, apparently. And Kevin Spacey is in
yep.
this.
Yep.
Did you see? It's absolutely just looks just like Kevin Spacey.
Was it page...
It's 8.
Set 8, yeah. That guy. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
And,
yeah, the numerology garbage, after that I was like, I don't know if this book can come and bring me back, because that is meaningless. I don't
yes,
know.
It is.
That's, hey, look, there's these three numbers or three letters, mm-hmm. and then you just add stuff to them and move them around, and it means something. I'm like, that, if you have to do all that, it means it's meaningless. That's, mm-hmm. you don't have, I don't, like you said, it could be a lot simpler, and it's telling the exact same story.
Yeah.
I don't know. The art is fine.
I hate it.
Really? Wow. I thought it was okay.
It looks like a bunch of weird tracings. I think the fat detective is named Sam. His mm-hmm. face looks like a scrotum.
Jesus.
I don't like that. What is with... This is like Angel versus Venom.
Yeah, I know. It really
it's
is.
Like, it's like such a fucking shitty ripoff.
Well, apparently he is. He's like a mutant. That's what I gleaned from
they,
it. And, oh, he, they said he's had that. Powers before they gave him the symbiote. I'm like, well, what? Oh. Okay, so this is really it. It really is Angel and Venom.
Yeah.
It's very strange. I don't know. I guess I'm a do not buy. It's. I don't think I'm not the target audience for this. Certainly. Mm-hmm. I mean, is Spawn still running just because people are still buying it, or just because it's Todd McFarlane and you know he was so important to Image that they just kind of make him as a legacy and just let him run at Spawn forever?
I don't know. The guy's got to get ball money. Somehow.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a do not buy.
Good lord, yes.
I mean, it's interesting to talk about, but no, I don't, you know, unless you really loved Spawn in the 90s and you're like, what's it like now? And then you're
probably,
oh, it's
no,
not.
You're probably already reading it if you're the person that wants to keep reading it.
Yeah, that's true. But regardless, we're Devil Do Not Buy Spawn number 250.
Do you think there's a demographic overlap of Spawn fans and Juggalos?
Absolutely. 100% chance there's overlap there.
Hmm. Where's that Venn diagram?
It's not a perfect one circle, but I think there's certainly overlap in there.
Yeah.
Next up, our last indie book of the week, Nameless Number One. Words by Grant Morrison. Art by Chris Burnham. Colors Nathan Fairbairn. Letters Simon Boland. Logo and design, Ryan Hughes at Device, whatever that means. This is the same team who was doing Batman Inc. Your our favorite, one of our favorite comics. Oh,
yeah, not my favorite.
Eric owns the has a paper copy. He's showing it to me in this little camera now.
Can't, yes.
What is your thoughts on this one, Eric?
Holy shit, I love it.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, I'm surprised. I was like, I don't know. I was shocked a little bit, and I was certainly a little put off at first because that's the Bluetooth symbol on page one. That's clearly the Bluetooth logo. I believe I would have come up with another symbol, but I don't know. Like, there's a lot of really crazy ass ideas in this, and that's what I come to these nut jobs for. You know, it was a damn roller coaster. It was insane. I didn't insult my intelligence. You had to really run to keep up, and it's a lot of fun, wacky ass occult ideas. I had a blast reading it. This was, well, there were a lot of good books this week, but this one was high on the list for me. You clearly feel different.
I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this book. You said it. Yes, it certainly does not hold your hand.
Mm-mm.
And certainly Grant Morrison going, here's a lot of crazy shit, try and keep up. And
you know me,
I
appreciate it when someone says, here's a lot of crazy shit, try
yeah,
and keep
we're
up.
We're gonna discuss that later on as well. I think
I'm sorry.
But I was not necessarily sure what was happening all the time.
Yeah, and I don't think you're supposed to, but I think there's enough going on, and particularly the part at the end, like there's enough there that you understand the shape of where the plot is going, and you can say, well, you know, all of this was weird. I'm going to understand it better later. You know, there's a billionaire on the moon. He's like, well, I'm not going to be extinct. You want to help me save the world from occult meteorites?
Not a billionaire, a billionot.
Yes, of course. Forgive me.
You got to get it right, Eric. Grant Morrison has made him a billionot, whatever the fuck that means. But
it's an astronaut billionaire. Come on, man. Have you never portmanteaued a word?
Never. That's not like us. Me, yep. Especially.
Nerp.
I think that, yes, certainly the last half of the book, that is very clear. They made it very simple. Like, yeah, this dude, he needs help saving the world from Aztec afterlife, or the Zabalba.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a meteorite asteroid named Zabalba. I just don't understand how the lizard people and the veiled lady. What her, she's an enemy. She's bad. I got that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a buy. It's probably a little mushy. I do like Chris Burnham's art. It's very, very nice.
I hate his art, but I like it in this.
Okay.
Like Batman Inc. It makes me want to vomit. Don't you remember that drawing of like the beat up baby face?
Yeah, I do remember that.
That made me want to throw my tablet across the wall.
But you like it in this? Why?
I don't know. There's something almost preacher-esque, Steve Dillon-esque about it that, like, it's presenting an ugly world, and I like mm-hmm. that. You know, it's all working in its own world, and it enhances it. But when I see, like, that kind of Dillon-esque ugliness in Batman, like, I don't know. I think Batman needs to be sharp and clean and it needs to have appeal. And Dylan is gritty and dirty and is not appealing. So I think it meshes well with this and enhances the story, where it was a complete roadblock for me in Batman Inc. It completely colored my perception of that.
Okay. But you're a solid buy.
Yeah. Right? I full on love this book.
Cool.
I like this protagonist, and I don't know, weird, crazy, occult dream magic. What the hell? I love it.
It is certainly a Grant Morrison book. I hope they delve more into the occult stuff and not get further away from the surface, like him on a bus. Like, I don't know. But that's regardless. Double buy. Nameless number one. I think I would put probably go Mushmeter 2 on this as well, but so that brings us down Mushmeter 1 overall. But as you heard from Eric, he is head over heels.
Mm-hmm.
On to our Marvel books. We have three of them. That's right, three of them. Mm-hmm. Starting off, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, number 2. Written by Ryan North, art by Erica Henderson. I'm sure there's a credits page in here somewhere. Color art by Rico Renzi, lettering by Clayton Cowles. What do you think, Eric? You like it more or less than the first one?
Oh, definitely more than the first one. And I did not dislike the first one. It just, something about it was a little goofy, a little off. This book is rad. It's funny.
It's hilarious.
I know, I like it. It's good. It's got a touch of the dumb.
Well, yeah.
And I think absolutely. It's really strange that, what's his name? Let me look it up real quick. I want to see if it's the name that I'm thinking of. I don't think
what,
it is.
The boy
no,
she
it
likes?
Totally, it totally, yes. The boy that she likes looks just like Danny Pudi from Community.
Yeah,
Abed.
I can see it.
Looks exactly like, he's the nerdy guy from Community, and he's the heartthrob in this book. It's like him if he did some bench presses. Or yeah. Maybe he does do a lot of bench presses, and he's just really skinny. I don't know. But this is like the slightly more athletic Danny Pudi.
Yeah, but hey guys, Ryan North's good at writing comedy and funny comic books. I think that's pretty firmly in place now after Adventure Time and this. He's operating on. I really enjoy that segment with her being engaging in conversation with him, and then having all the thought balloons.
Yes,
slowly envelop the conversation, and then she's lost, and you know they're talking about fencing.
That yeah.
Then the squirrels. The squirrel. And this just so good, fighting Galactus and Iron Men. There's Iron Men.
Mm-hmm.
Iron Men costumes, at least. And then there's a Squirrel Girl Iron Man suit.
That happens.
With a tail. Iron-suited tail.
She's 98% curvier than Tony Stark.
Yes. It's important you get those. The armor has to know. Eric Anderson's art still is delightful. It's a perfect fit for this book.
Henderson.
That's what I said.
Okay. I heard Anderson.
Henderson.
Okay, you can skip me arguing with you.
I'll speak clearly. But yes, it is delightful. I really enjoy it.
You would be squirrely not to buy this book, derp. He's laughing like Muttley. That means I win.
The funniest thing was like you pausing to think about that for a second and then going, yep, that's it, and then delivering.
Yeah. Da-da-da.
I'm bye. Buy this. This is so good. This is such a good book. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's if you liked the first one, if you have a soul, just buy this book.
Yeah, it's great. So much fun. Next up, Ms. Marvel, number 11. Basically finishing off.
Speaking of having a soul.
Finishing off basically the second arc, or and really the whole of the first. I don't know if you could call these first 11 issues one piece, but it certainly feels like this is the last issue of that and beginning launching her into something else. Like this is like I think we've alluded to before, like her like beginner superhero story, and then they'll maybe go further on. You know, escalate, and that certainly feels like they're heading in that direction. But before we go anywhere, G. Willow Wilson, writer; Adrian Alfano on art; Ian Herron, colors; Joe Caragmana, letters. Final showdown with the Inventor, with all these miscreant kids helping fight Lockjaw, fight giant robots. Her and Kamala kind of coming to terms with sometimes you need help. I think that is the if there's a moral, it's okay to ask for help once in a while. And she gets into a Jim Gordon relationship with Carl Winslow. I did like that.
I do approve of that.
He's like, I'm not going to take your badge away. I'm like, but you know, you got to be careful.
I hope that there's all kinds of like hidden references to Family Matters in the next couple of issues. Just ironic references to a terrible 90s show.
Did I do that?
Exactly. And then they start sneaking in characters from Step by Step. And then slowly it becomes a book about Patrick Duffy.
Hey guys, this comic book's really good. I think we say that every time.
I never talk about Patrick Duffy every time.
No, we don't talk about Patrick Duffy all the time, but no. Ms. Marvel's a great comic.
Yes, it is.
I'm excited to see where it goes next. There's some Loki in the next issue. That should
be
exciting.
There's a Loki tease. Mm-hmm. We might get some Loki. Loki Lysmith.
But Adrian Alfano. Adrian Alfano still doing a great job.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
I think every issue is the best issue.
Yeah, they're all great.
But especially this one. especially whichever one I'm reading.
So, hey guys, bye Ms. Marvel.
Honestly, we could have absolutely not talked about this, but there's no reason. We're going to read it. We'll have to.
Yeah, so bye. Double bye. Ms. Marvel, number 11.
Yes.
Next up, last book of the week, coming back to Ant-Man. Ant-Man number 2. We had bought number one. We were double buy number one, but we saw potential in it. We weren't necessarily fully on board with it. But we were like, you know, we can. I like this issue more than number one. Where are you at, Eric?
Oh no, absolutely. That has been the trend. Is it seems like if we were a little bit weak on something in like issue one or two, that a lot of these stories are picking up. They're getting more interesting. This is not the exception. This is strong. We're starting to see a little bit who it's Lang, isn't it?
Yes, Scott.
Scott Lang, not Johnny Lang. He's not a blues musician that we know of.
No, not yet.
Yeah,
but yeah, he fights a Nazi robot. That's pretty good.
It keeps gold. What's up with that? That's weird. It looks like the Iron Giant.
It does a little bit.
I want him to be voiced by Vin Diesel. And speak in German. That's not really German.
I can't even say German words.
You can't even quote something from Du hast.
Du hast nicht.
It's Du hast mich.
Whatever.
Do you want me to sing it?
No, I sing it better than
the guy in Rammstein.
I don't. It's Rammstein. Thank you very much.
Oh, well, excuse me.
You know what's the most interesting thing to me in this issue is that lady, the elderly woman.
I am very intrigued
by her. Yeah,
I know. She's rad as hell.
I want some adventures of her putting that robot away.
I know. I don't know the power banker.
But yes, I think it's a little bit more tighter than that first issue.
Yes,
it is. I think it's telling a smaller story, which I think is where it does the best. And it's funny, introduces interesting characters. We haven't even mentioned the Grizzly.
I love these stupid animal characters. Like, I love the walrus and the rhino.
What about the armadillo?
The armadillo?
Yeah, he's a real character. Yeah, he's there.
Man, Marvel is so dumb. This is amazing. But a guy in a bear suit that just like yells and punches people. That's delightfully stupid. It's fantastic.
Nobody wants to hire an ex-con in a bear suit exoskeleton.
I mean, of course not. Don't be stupid.
Yeah, don't be stupid. And if it didn't do a good enough job of getting me, it has a Taskmaster on the last page. I love the Taskmaster. I'm a big fan. I like this comic. I'm a firm buy on it now. I'm on board with this. It's the heir apparent to Superior Foes of Spider-Man. And it kind of really is. You can already see him going in that direction with the Grizzly.
Yes.
Yeah.
That guy's a Venture Brothers character, if ever there's been one.
So I'm a buy. Solid buy on this one.
It's tremendous. I'm pleased.
Double buy. Ant-Man number 2. Glad to see it doing well.
Yeah.
Being a good book. Anything else? Any other comics you read this week, Eric?
Nope. Not until we discuss comics at the end of this podcast.
Yes, I mean, issues. You know what I mean.
I did. I just want... I like being a smartass to you.
I know.
It's little joys in life.
Those are the little things.
Yes.
So, that's it for Weekly Floppies. Floppies Part of the Week is now over. I know it's very sad. Don't worry. We'll be back next week with more of it. It's the one thing you can rely on.
Mm-hmm. Set your clock to it.
Yep. And with that, next up, checking in. Eric was blown back by the sound.
I was.
Checking this part of the show where Eric and I talk about what we've been up to during the week. Eric, what have you been up to during the week?
I've been reading about snakes.
Okay.
Not snakes, but a programming language. Named Python. Yeah.
Python?
Mm. It's actually named after Monty Python.
How's it going? How's that? I've heard it's very useful, but I don't know how easy is it.
In terms of programming languages, Python is one of the easiest ones to jump into because mm-hmm. it has focus on readability, and it's very logical. It does a lot of things very well, very powerfully, and it works kind of the way say Java does, in that there is an environment that executes the code. It's been a fascinating book, giving me way more information than I ever thought I would possibly want to know. And it turns out I want to know it. It's really cool.
Any particular reason you picked it up or reading it?
Your wonderful fiance left it on the Kindle.
Ah, okay.
So I am reading Miss Kimberly's copy of Python. There's that, and there's a book about being a data scientist that I probably will not read.
Oh, so just but a whim.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have toyed with the idea, like, I want to learn to program. I've written some scripts in JavaScript, which is not terribly different. You know, you just write things in regular old text files, and then something else just executes it, but it's a little bit different in that, you know, Python, you can actually create, like, a real program, at least in the way people think of it, and, you know, make a what's called a frozen binary, and, you know, it's neat. It's fun. There's all kinds of fun tech in it, and it's exciting, and it's helped me have a lot of very nerdy-ass conversations this weekend. I don't know what the deal is. It's just, I'm becoming a nerd magnet. I was at a show last night, and it turns out the drummer in your future brother-in-law's band is a computer science student, but not like a web developer or something like that. Like, he works with, like, low-level stuff. Like, I didn't even really understand it. Like, when he was describing it, I felt like I was following it, but I can't repeat anything that he said. It was a lot of low-level stuff in communication and, you know, trying to write algorithms to do low-level stuff to, you know, communicate with whatever. I don't even know. Trying to write efficient algorithms, which is fascinating.
If you listen closely, you can hear the sounds of things flying over my head.
Whoosh.
Yes, there you go. There's that. There it went.
Oh, it's been good, though. What else did I do? I have no idea. You know what's coming up in a couple of weeks?
Renaissance Fest? Renaissance Fair?
Well, that's a good way to spend some time. Drink and Draw.
Oh, right.
Drink and Draw is coming. I've been putting posters up today. I'm so pumped up about it. Did you see the new poster?
I did.
I think I posted it last week, but I got them printed today. I'm really pleased about it. But it's giving me an opportunity to, like, go out in the community and try and meet artists and rub elbows a little bit. So that is what my life has been, being a nerd and being an artist.
Elbows.
Mm-hmm. Grease them elbows right up.
Mm-hmm.
Mission complete.
Now it's your turn to ask me what I've done.
So, what have you done?
What have I done this week, Eric? Is that what you're asking?
I was wondering if I could just ask you any more sultry.
Robbie. Robbie.
There you go. That's more. That's definitely more sultry.
Hey there, Robbie. What did you do? What did you do this weekend?
This weekend I whatever, went to a birthday whatever. Party and dressed up like Wreck-It Ralph.
I'm disappointed you didn't dress like a princess.
I couldn't find one that's my size. I didn't have the time to put one together. So what I did do that I can actually talk about for a length of time, I finished Far Cry 4.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, Eric, do you ever play Far Cry 3?
No, but I remember you talking about it.
Far Cry 4, very similar to Far Cry 3. It's
there you go.
A little bit more refined. They did add a few things to it. They definitely fine-tuned a lot of the systems they use. It's a very tight game. The gameplay, the core like gameplay loop is very satisfying. It does first-person stealth very well. A lot of cool weapons you can use and a lot of cool RPG kind of stuff where you can level up your health. You know, you level up everything, gain new abilities. You start off as like just a regular Joe and then you know, eventually the very basic story is that it's not set in Nepal, but it's basically set in Nepal. It's a fake country called Kirat, but it's supposed to be Nepal. And you're returning to this country spread your mother's ashes. And you go there and you're immediately kidnapped by the dictator of the country, who is a very fashionable, very charismatic kind of guy. You probably have seen at least promos of him.
I have. There was a purple suit guy. There was a big stink about the original cover, cover art, which had him, what was he sitting on, like a native person or something?
I know he had his feet
resting on them.
Something along those lines.
It was something to that effect, and there was a huge uproar about it. And the company was like, yeah, he's not supposed to be likable. Like, there can be bad people in things, and they can still be inclusive.
Yeah, he's an awful monster. That's the idea.
But you know, they still removed it. They still censored it. Which I don't particularly agree with, but, you know, there's a small kernel of truth somewhere in the middle of that stupidity. So
yeah, I
guess it's okay.
I'm fine. Whatever. He is an awful monster. Like that's part of the game. It's like, he's fine with just doing awful, awful things but he is still incredibly charismatic and even funny at some points. Like the main problem with Far Cry 3 is that you get a lot of the most important, like the most interesting character is one of the villains, but then you kill him about three quarters of the way through the game. And then you're just kind of bleh. The problem with Far Cry 4 is that you yourself are not very interesting, and you're kind of railroaded into your decisions. Like, the ending is the problem I have with it. Like, you end up finding out that no matter what you choose, you kind of lose. Like, there was no right choices. And I guess that, I mean, it is trying to, it's, a game like this doesn't seem like a game that should be telling you, like, hey, war is really bad, and you know, you're participating in this, you're like engaging in like cultural warfare and genocide and stuff, even if you don't even think about it. And like, this game has you like ruthlessly murdering hundreds, if not thousands of people, like, and you don't get it. You don't get any of that unless you're in the story missions. So it kind of, I don't know, it's sending a mixed message. I think they could have gone deeper with that if they wanted to be that the message of the game. But the core gameplay is still a lot of fun. I mean, you can jump off like a 100-foot tower and you have a body suit, like a wingsuit that you can unleash and then fly it and then land on a person and murder them. So like, it's very impressive and cool. Like all the cool stuff you can do. There's tons of cool weapons and it makes you feel really like powerful. Like it does have a good like curve, but you know, I don't think they could do Far Cry 5 the same. They'd have to make it a different game. They'd have to do something different, put a different spin on it in some way.
At the time is ripe for Blood Dragon 2.
People are complaining, like, they're like, they can't do that now because they already did do Blood Dragon. Like, they can't just make it like a Saints Row-esque kind of story because they've already done it. But, you know, they probably will do it again.
Blood Dragon. Oh, God, I need to play it.
The other thing I want to talk about is comic book related. I don't know if you've read anything about this, Eric.
You might comics?
Have. Yeah, I know. About DC, Divergence. Mm-hmm. Have you read about this at all?
Maybe. Go ahead and tell me about it.
It's generally pretty exciting. I'm actually very excited about this news. It is like, I don't know if DC, I don't know what's happening over there, but this is after Convergence, which is kind of, I think, related to Multiversity in some way. It, you know, it's a lot of these all, but then Divergence is what's happening afterwards. And it is basically a whole slew of new titles being launched, many of which are the kind you would expect from our buddies at Marvel in, you know, what we're seeing in Gotham Academy and Batgirl.
Yeah.
More of that, a Black Canary solo title, a Cyborg solo title, you know, more diverse creative teams and things that are not strictly punching, superhero punching comics.
This, this involves the new Firestar book. So I knew I did know about the Batgirl spinoff with, Black Canary. That looks very cool. But I'm excited for the new Firestar as well.
Yeah, that's again that, and again, that's one of the ones they've mentioned, the fact that it, you know, it might not be her as like this that's not appropriate for children at all.
She's not going to be Slut Machine from space.
I think not. I hope not. At least it doesn't look like it. But I applaud DC. I think they are seeing the writings on the wall.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, we need to diverge if we want to survive.
Their numbers are horrible. Did you see that?
I
don't know how that compares year to year. Normal.
Was that the year? I thought that was just January. I saw the January numbers.
I want to say that was the year that I think that the chart said for the year. And I want to say that when Liefeld posted it, that it was for 2014. That is what I recall.
Because I had seen the January numbers posted very recently, so I was wondering if that's what he was reposting or not. Let's see. Mm-hmm. You just have a screen cap. I have to look, actually.
Well, it was an image that I had. I hadn't seen anything else, but it should say, if you know, 2014.
It doesn't say anything. It just says top comic book publishers. Okay. I know. I don't know.
I want to say he said it was for 2014, but these numbers exist. I'm sure we can find them.
I am looking. It's January 2015. That's the picture he has on his Twitter. Okay. That's what I thought.
That's less grim.
It is less grim for DC, but I mean that a lot of that is the Star Wars book.
Because
it sold so much. But still, that's not necessarily, I mean, Marvel has led all, I mean, from like, not necessarily always had the top comic, but they generally have sold better overall than DC pretty much the entire year. And Image is close to 10% of the market. DC, I'm sure, is worried about that piece shrinking, and they see what Marvel's doing, and that Marvel is still having punching superhero comics, but also having non-punching superhero comics. And you can have both. You're allowed. And I'm glad. I'm excited. I'm interested to see how these comics do, what they are, and to read them. It will make me more excited about DC. Gotham Academy Batgirl immediately came on the scenes. They were immediately some of my favorite books. Hopefully DC notices and starts. That's what they've done. They've expanded. I approve.
Well, not if Gotham Academy gets canceled.
Yeah, they better not cancel Gotham Academy, or I'll you know, probably still continue to spend money on their comic books, but you know, whatever. Okay. I think that's it. I think we're good. Right? Right, Eric? Feeling good about it?
I'm better than good.
Whoa. You great?
I'm fantabulous.
Oh, so, well, you should be, cause we're about to talk about, something near and dear to your heart. At least what you've told me.
My cybernetic heart.
We are going to go over to our final segment of the week. It is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Nerd Boy Book Club is a part of the show when Eric and I assign a longer collected work and discuss it in depth like you would a book club, except, you know, they're comics.
Mm-hmm. It's a comics.
It's a comics. This week we are doing Battle Angel Alita number 1 through 5, roughly half of it. We're going to do the other half next week.
I do think that there's a shift after book 5, and I specifically wanted to break it off there. I'm feeling pretty glad that I did.
Okay.
So a little bit of a cliffhanger at the end of 5 too, but good god, this book.
Yeah, story and art by Yukito Kishiro.
That's good enough.
Good enough. You have professed this one of your favorite books, Eric.
I will say it right now. It is one of my favorite books.
All right.
All time, bar none, have reread it twice now, in recent weeks still feel the same. I mean, it is a little flawed because this is probably, this was Yukito Kishiro's, one of his first works as a young artist. He was not very old when he did this, but he was very hungry and hardworking, and you can really see that.
When did you first read this book, and what is the things you like about it the most?
It's hard for me to say that I don't even know that I even liked it when I first read it. Mm. I read it was somewhere around book six or so when I started reading, and I was reading individual. This was back when Viz was publishing these as regular comic style books. Like each chapter in the overall pocket manga, each chapter was, you know, a regular black and white book.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't do that anymore today.
No,
you don't see a whole lot of that. But it was different. It was the 90s. I don't know, but it was very bizarre to me. Like at that point, I had literally never read a book with a female main character, and it's hard for me to say why that was so compelling. Like, it was very confusing to me. Confusing. Like, I had no idea. Like, well, this is, why is she beating this guy up? And, like, I don't know. It just didn't jive with me. But it has certainly, I think, changed the way that I read things. This was at the same time when, like, every book looked, you know, there was, like, a guy like Cable and a guy like Death's Head or something. You know, everybody was like a giant testosterone monster with guns and wires coming out of his face and pockets, pockets on pockets on pockets.
You need pouches. You need to carry stuff. Eric.
Right. And then, you know, along comes this book with an incredibly tiny girl mm-hmm. who is a robot that does mm-hmm. magic karate.
Yep.
And I don't know, man. It was fucking amazing. Like, and it's got that kind of, that Hodorowski sort of craziness of, like, you turn the page and, like, here's something fucking insane. Oh, here's a guy that's addicted to eating other people's endorphins. Here she's going to rip her heart out and use it to keep somebody's head alive. Here's a guy with brain enhancements so he can have super chi. It's effing amazing. Like, there are some of my favorite art and some of my favorite characters in all of comics and literature are in this book. Can you guess who my favorite character is?
Your favorite character?
Mm-hmm.
I sure as hell hope it's not Hugo.
No, everyone hates Hugo.
I fucking hate Hugo so much.
Everybody hates Hugo.
He's the worst.
Alita has a couple of crushes in the series. Hugo is by far the worst. The other two are much cooler.
Good. I'm glad.
No, you will like
Hugo's,
you will like the
fucking worst.
Hugo is a shit. He is a whiny turd. He is
so happy when he died. I was like, yes.
I know. You can hate Hugo. It's okay. That whole book is a low point. In my eyes, I find it funny that the first one is better than the one with Hugo. I don't think the story's necessarily all bad, but Hugo is such a shit. He is the Shinji of this book. Do you know? Oh God, you don't know who Shinji is.
I don't. So that
that's okay.
I'll take that at face value. Your favorite character?
You're not enough of a weeaboo. It's all right.
I'm not. I don't know. Is it Alita?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not Alita. I love Alita to death. I love her. She's an amazing character.
Ito? Is it Dr. Ito? Edo?
I like it's Ito. Doc Ito. Okay. Daisuke Doc Ito. Ito. I like Ito, but this is going to give it away. You're getting warmer.
I'm getting warmer?
You're getting warmer.
Is it that weird mechanic dude? I don't know.
It's Dr. Desti Nova.
Oh, God.
God, he's fucking amazing. Oh my God, he's a nut. It's the best. He's so insane. He's such, he's, he's like if Darth Vader was an insane, like, mad scientist. I swear, he's so evil. I don't know. He's just so sick and twisted, and the stuff that he does is insane. And he's just like the conduit for all of the future craziness that happens in this book. No, he's amazing. And his whole quest, like, he has some very choice monologues later in the series that make him just so flawed and so weird and so interesting. His whole quest to overcome karma, it's just, I don't know. I could read a dozen more issues of just him doing insane shit to people.
I would not have predicted that.
He makes the story interesting. It's too happy. It's too happy without old Desti Nova.
Yeah, too happy with them playing. What's the game? What's that game called? Motorball?
Motorball. Motorball is like, a weird sort of segue, you know? It's a side story.
I was not expecting suddenly we have two whole volumes about death sports. Although I have professed very recently about enjoying futuristic death sports. So first fighting against and then with Grace Jones, I did enjoy that.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that some of these, yeah, she's what, playing death sports with Grace Jones and the alien from Alien, the xenomorph. I'm fairly certain one of those robots, cyborgs, I explain this to me, Eric.
Sure.
Are all these contestants, they're all human, they have human brains in cyborg bodies?
Correct. That's mostly what happens in the scrapyard and really any part of the Earth. I think it's mostly around the scrapyard, but most of our story is around that in the dangerous parts of the world. Most people just can't sort of seem to live or make a living. That, like, their bodies just die or they get killed or whatever, and they end up just being, you know, just merged with something really rough and ugly and mechanical. It's like having your brain put in a beat up old truck.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about all that because Grace Jones looks like a person.
Yeah,
what's his face? Brain chi guy.
Joshigan, Emperor Joshigan. He's mostly Joshigan, machine. Yeah. He's mostly machine. Whatever her name is. I like that she's Grace Jones, It's something like Balfy or something. I don't know. It's something odd. Yeah.
She gets chopped into ribbons like almost everyone else, so it doesn't necessarily matter.
It is one of, I think, the most effective, that whole action sequence of Joshigan destroying them. I mean, just absolutely taking them apart. It is, I think, one of the most effective and amazing. It's just like 4 to 6 or however many pages it is. No dialogue, no sound effects. You understand perfectly what's happening. Some of the best drawing I've ever seen in my life. It is like an incredible tour de force of comic book storytelling. It's incredible. I could just watch it, just look at it all day. It's unreal how beautiful it is. I'm entranced in it right now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it too.
Like, I see, like, almost nothing like it anywhere.
It is very cinematic.
Yeah, and
it's
glorious. It's absolutely amazing. Joshigan is basically, he is exactly Kenshiro from Fist of the North Star. This almost feels like an homage of Yukito Kenshiro saying, well, Alita is my girl version of Kenshiro. And this is her versus Kenshiro as a robot. And that's just beautiful and exciting to me.
What is with his sister?
That is a complicated question. Specifically, what part? I think she has brain damage or something. For what?
Okay. Well, yeah, her speech patterns are strange. I don't know. I was just curious. And like,
it is a more common thing in Japanese culture for Japanese women or even children. Like, it's a stupid, childish thing to do, but a lot of, to try and sound gentle, a lot mm-hmm. of Japanese women they'll use, instead of saying any sort of pronoun for themselves, they will say their name, you know. Mm-hmm. Rumi wants to do this, you know. Hina wants to do this. Or, like, that's actually really funny, because there is a character named Hina in One Piece that does that. She says her own name instead of a pronoun, except she doesn't. She is, like, she's got this dead serious, like, just really deep woman voice. Like, she means business, but she still talks about herself in this third person way. But it's anyway, what I'm driving at is it's much more common in Japanese culture for this. And usually these people sort of act a little bit like this dumb character. She's a horrible character.
Yeah, it struck me the shower, that yeah. 2-page shower sequence. I'm like, why?
I was totally looking at that, and as I was reading that this past time, I was like, there is never a reason for a shower scene, ever, ever. Like, there's never a point, like Hitchcock, and that's it. There's no reason ever, except let's look at some boobies. And honestly, this book is, you know, it came out in the 90s, and it was about a female protagonist. An amazing female protagonist, and it ended up never really being about that. Like,
no,
even Ghost in the Shell was a lot of like, well, now I'm a naked machine with boobies.
That's what struck me so much, is that there's not Alita. I was expecting at least some sex, some of that, and there's not really any.
There's no. I don't think there's any sex in this at all. Like, I think the closest we get is, like, that those two pages or whatever of Shimura naked in the shower, which got not even good storytelling, because all she's like is like, ah, I'm dumb. I'm going to say something. I have soap in my eye. Completely useless storytelling. Tells you nothing about anything. Reveals no character. No plot goes forward. It really just felt like, well, I've got some empty pages and I want this part to be at this part in the book, so I'm going to draw a naked girl. Unfortunately, as artists, when we, I don't know, when you can't think of anything better, that's default. That's why there's so many paintings of naked women. So, like, well, I could just do this. It's fine. I don't have to think about stuff.
You know what this reminds me of?
What does it remind you of?
Metabarons.
Yeah.
You mentioned Jodorowsky.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's, I think mostly not even necessarily like the crazy stuff. I mean, there's tons of crazy stuff, but I mean, mm-hmm. the fact that it's like, it definitely has like rooted in that like body, weird body modification and morphs and body horror and all that stuff.
Absolutely.
Plus like very like characters. I'm not even sure. I'm not as well versed in manga and Japanese tradition and, you know, comics as well as you. Like, so I'm not necessarily, like, it. I don't think I remember it as much in either Dragon Ball or One Piece, which we both read for podcasts. Like, it's just a lot of moments where people are just, like, declaring their feelings in loud, bold statements to each other.
In this, or in this, all of them.
Yes. No, I don't know about all of them, but in this
Give me an example. Just to be specific, one that stands out to you. I definitely am not denying, because that doesn't sound plausible.
No, it happens a few times, but the ones I can remember off the top of my head is when Alita finds Ito in the scrapyard during the motorball parts when they're just having
towards the end of the motorball arc or at the beginning?
Yeah, I think it's towards the end. I forget. Towards I'm not end. Sure entirely. I think so. I can't remember exactly. But they're just like speaking very much. They, you know, I remember when you said you would never change. There's one thing you can always count on, and that I will always be me, or something like that along those lines. Ito was saying to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never like, I think it's more artfully done than in Meta Barons, frankly. The
Meta Barons, yeah, I mean, really, Yudorovsky is not a good storyteller. He's just like his storytelling is the closest thing to taking drugs. That's that's really why people like him. But I think I do think that the storytelling is better in this. But I think it, in addition to what you're saying, that it it has that sort of episodic movement to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there's all these different aspects. Like in the other book, it was the Meta Baron having to deal with so many diverse different things. And in this, it's like, well, here's the period of my life where I was a hunter warrior. And here's the period of my life when I decided to be roller derby queen.
Yeah.
And all of these different things. And the book does sort of follow that pattern, kind of escalating and becoming even more and more serious while still exploring a lot of the same ideas in the world and building a larger and larger cast of just weird fucking characters.
Yeah, I was a little I mean, I really do like the motorball parts.
Yeah.
I think it's
great, and it's obviously it's beautiful.
It's one of the action that obviously works so well with it that it's hard to say, it just feels, I was a little disappointed that it didn't go where it seemed to be going.
Mm-hmm.
Like after one, I hated Hugo, of course, but two was still interesting in the fact that it was breaching like that, the separation between them and, was it Tifares or Tipar? I don't know how to say it.
I just say Tifares. I think that's what it is. Tifares.
Okay.
It's a floating city, right. It is a translated name, and it is almost certainly not that in the Japanese version. Alita's name is Gally in the Japanese version. She was still named after the cat, though.
Okay.
Did you catch that, right?
I did catch that, yes.
She's named after Doc Ito's cat.
Yeah. I don't know. Half of me wanted that for them to go. I imagine that's what happens later on in the series, is that they go explore, hopefully. I that's where I want them to go. I'm not going to try and predict what happens, but I want to see
exactly what cuz I don't understand. What do you mean?
The Typhars thing. I would like them to explore that.
Okay.
The relationship between, obviously, yes. How people on Earth ended up there and then ended up in the difference in between.
Yeah.
I mean, the rich are rich. Obviously, the rich people are up top and poor people are down, but I don't know that. That's what I presume.
And a lot of it's unclear, and it's the part of the world that it really does feel at this point that, it needs to be explored. I don't want to give anything away.
Right.
I don't think you could write up to this point and end where it ended and not explore those things.
Right.
It just would not feel satisfying.
You mentioned Alita's name.
Mm-hmm.
Her and Ito's relationship, is it supposed to feel like, I don't know, sometimes it borders on him like a...
It's a little incestuous.
It's mostly father-daughter, but then it kind of breaches a little bit.
Well, I think it started out, you know, he finds a woman in the garbage and rebuilds her and dresses her like a doll. Like, it's some fetish for him, you know, it's like fun for him. Except it's not really meant that dark, you know. Ito is largely presented as a good guy. You know,
they subvert it early on by making her suspicious of him and then finding, he's actually doing good.
Yeah, but it's pretty rare in this. And even when he's shown a little bad, he redeems himself. He's, I like Ito a lot. I really do. He's,
I really wish he had kept that rocket hammer.
I know, right?
What happened to that? There's no rocket hammer later on. It's early on in the series, and then it just disappears.
He got him a concho stick, though.
He does have, rocket.
Do you know what concho is?
I'm not sure. I think I know what you're talking about, but I don't know what that is.
Concho is like this horrible game that Japanese kids play, to where like if their friend is turned away from them, they'll like walk up and stick their hand in like their friend's butt crack, and they go concho. And he found a stick in the alley when that guy was trying to rape Shimura.
Right. Yes.
And he gives him concho stick, which I think that I think that's a good punishment for attempted rape. You get
poked
in the butt
with a
stick. Both
of those men get beat the shit
beat
out of them.
Oh, yeah, they
do. Yeah.
He kicks that guy in the balls. That's good. That was, I don't know, that was some instant karma. I like that.
I think the only thing that really stood out to me, that I apart from that shower scene,
mm-hmm. it really like that felt not fit.
No, go inconsistent ahead. What is his name? Her manager and motorball guy. The guy with the
Estoc.
Mask on. Estoc.
I love him. Why is he inconsistent
like him,
to you?
No. I like him a lot for most of the story, but just at the end, suddenly he's just like, no, you, like he starts to like strong arm.
Oh, right.
And then, then he throws himself in front of a bullet. So it's not it felt weird. Like he didn't seem like he was a bully at all. And then suddenly he is.
Well, to me, it's very consistent with his motivation. I know it is very jarring that he's, like, in general, like a very gentle and helpful person. But he's putting so much stock, so much of himself into mm-hmm. Alita that he was a rival of Joshigan,
mm-hmm.
who became the greatest, like, so great at this point that literally no one in the world can compete with him. He is Kenshiro in this book. You know, he is like invincible. Like a building falls on him and guys with mohawks run away in terror. You have no idea what I'm talking about, do you?
I don't.
Never seen Fist of the North Star?
No.
There's this ridiculous and epic scene in the movie where Kenshiro, there's just this shroud covered in mud and rocks. And it looks like the blurry picture of the Sasquatch, and like
okay.
a collapsed skyscraper falls on its head, and it just keeps walking through the skyscraper, and then all the mud and rocks fall off, and it's got the main character fully dressed under there, under all this layers of mud, and he just keeps walking. He's like, whatever, I'm the baddest man that's ever lived. And then he walks up on some bandits who watch all this happen. And then they're like, hey, you're a guy. We're going to stab you with a knife. You have no reaction to that.
Doesn't work out for them?
No, it doesn't.
No.
Like if you saw Superman fly through a building and then you're like, I have this big knife.
Probably wouldn't work out.
Yeah. I don't know. It's special.
Well, I was going to say, like, I really did enjoy his character. I love the fact mm-hmm. that he's addicted to this. Or
yeah.
not, I guess, well, I guess addicted.
He is an addict, but he's legitimately got a disease,
a problem
in his
in his
cyborg body that it's basically killing him.
And I really find that really enjoyable. I really like their relationship. That's why that one, just one and did, I don't know if I missed this or not. Did when, cause it in volume 5, we find that he had sold her berserker body.
Oh yeah,
to Nova. Does that actually mm-hmm. happen in 4? Or did I just?
They
miss
don't.
It?
No, they don't. They never show it. It's just sort of as an afterthought that. It's
and I don't like that
number 5. I don't like that. There's no reason, but I think that is consistent with that little scene in his character. Like I feel like I have to accept both of those things. I kind of agree with you that it is like the biggest dick move, and it almost feels like a plot device. That they have to get this thing out of his hands and into Nova's hands without Nova just being like, oh, I found this thing and I'm going to steal it. Which, honestly, I would have perfectly accepted, but how would he have known? That's all that I would have said. But I don't know. For Ed, I think Ed Estoc, I think is his name.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I felt like they were sullying him for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, it just seemed like, hey, it's a perfectly good guy. And then, oh, he does a dick thing, dies. And then we find out after he's dead, he did another dick thing. I'm like, I really liked him.
Right. I know.
And then
maybe it's, you know, addiction and he needed the money for his treatment. I don't know. I think I would have, if it were me writing that, I would have put in some foreshadowing to that, because it really does feel like a thrown in little afterthought. Never really stood out to me until, you know, this rereading, as you said. But yeah, what about Dog Master?
I do like him.
He's valor, glory, fury, hubris.
Yeah,
that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, he's cool. I wish there was more of him, honestly. But
well, fury is Fury is continues to be in the book.
Good, good. We get to see
more. Do you know which one Fury is? He's the Hound.
Of course.
Yeah, Fury's
Hound.
Hound of Fury.
Hound of Fury.
Yeah. Fucking awesome robot dogs and crazy old man. And Keytar.
Yes, I was going to say she that's the other thing. I'm like, does she's just great at everything? Is that how it works?
Well, when you're a robot, it's easy.
Oh, is it? Okay. I didn't know. I don't know the rules.
It's like the Matrix. Like, you plug into your brain and you're like, I know Kung Fu.
Is that your Keanu?
Sure.
Okay.
Why wouldn't it be?
I'm just asking.
I just got to Destiny Nova and it's filled me with joy.
I really don't like Destiny Nova.
Well, you're supposed to, he's a bad guy.
I know, but I don't like him
amazing to me. We should probably have a discussion about this. What is it? Is it just all the fucked up crazy shit that troubles you?
No, not really. It's pretty dark
that he takes Zapan's brain and, by the way, that romanization, Z-A-P-A-N, is very close to the way Japanese people pronounce Japan. I'm pretty sure that's what it's supposed to be.
Okay. It's not the gross stuff. I mean, it is gross, but whatever. It's no worse than anything in Metabarons or other. I mean, I love The Thing, and The Thing is disgusting.
This is the movie and not Blue Eyes.
Not Old Blue Eyes. Not Ben Grimm.
Not Ben Grimm.
I love Ben Grimm.
If you don't love Ben Grimm, I mean, come on. Ben Grimm's amazing.
Yeah, Ben Grimm's awesome.
Yeah.
No, it's, I don't know. It just feels very hacky. Like, he himself. Like, it's very, like, kind of like maniacal evil villain thing. And it's, like, I really, like, all the villains up to this point are very interesting. Like, they're, like, and they're not even villains. I think that's the best thing. Like, you don't, like, some of them are, like, what's the giant monster thing in the first book? Like,
Yeah, that's, I would take Destiny Nova over that guy any time.
That guy
is just gross snake thing with a tongue that likes to eat brains.
I know, but I actually like him more than Destiny Nova because I don't know.
There's zero depth to that. Destiny, explain why and then I'll start yakking.
I don't know. Like, I definitely thought, like, it obviously is the first book and you're not necessarily going to get some, like, a starter villain is what he kind of is. Like, and yes, he is not. I do like the bit you learn about him at the end. It kind of does. That changed me around on him a little bit. Like,
Which bit are we talking about?
When you find out, I was dumped in the sewer and then I was brought back to life and given all what I wanted at that point was, like, it reminded me. When did this come out, by the way, Eric? Do you know that? When the first one was published?
Roughly 92.
Okay, 92.
I can find out for you. Hold on.
Well, that's good enough for my, because it reminded me of Doomsday, honestly. There's a lot of stuff in this reminds me of comic book stuff that happened in the West later on. But they reminded me of Doomsday in that way. Like, this guy, all this beast is known is horror.
1990 through 1995.
Okay, 90, that's even earlier. Okay, so
yeah.
It reminds me of that in a way that, like, yes, of course, if I was a monster that all I knew was horror and torture, like, yes, I would try and kill everything. I don't know. I don't think I've gotten the meat of Destiny Nova, really, because he only really shows up in volume five.
When you look at the stories that we have been told up to this point, he is his whims, his insanity, it's all behind everything. Like, he created Joshigan after Joshigan's accident.
I didn't pick that up at all.
Yeah, he created the implants. He recreated Joshigan's brain. Joshigan's brain, and that's basically all these people are in the scrapyard, is their human brains that are still intact or mostly intact. He used nanotechnology. He's basically a fucking science wizard to rebuild a brain. And not only that, he saw that he was this rollerball guy that, you know, his whole fighting style was based around control of chi, that he sped up his brain. But I mean, the guy was already about to die, but it basically sealed the deal that he's like, well, you're going to have this super brain and you're going to be invincible, but you're going to die. You have a time limit. But it was just all on his crazy whim.
Were we supposed to infer that just from the flashback stuff, or does he ever actually say?
He says, it shows, let me go back. It's
I know it shows like a symbol or something, and that's the
it
thing.
Shows,
like,
it shows his face, or I think he even says the name. But
okay, I don't
it's
remember
the kind
that.
Of thing that you probably don't notice unless you go back and read. He's like, oh, I guess unnamed weirdo guy decides to bring him back to life and blah, blah, blah. Like it's strange and you don't, I don't know, you probably don't pick up on it, but it's definitely Nova, Desi Nova creates Joshigan. He was a top player before the accident, but after he became the strongest man in the world, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he creates the monster. And he creates the monster Zapan out of the Berserker body.
Yeah.
And basically that is who he is as a character, that his whole idea of I have to escape karma. So he spends his whole life doing his whims and bringing evil into the world and trying to outrun the evil that he's put into it. It's just, I don't know. It fascinates me. He's so odd, and he does so many different, just huge, crazy things. So much of this story is just like this balance of like how Alita's life, like, and how she interacts with Nova. They are like the two characters in this. You know, Alita trying to reclaim who she was, and in the meanwhile, going through all of the insanity that Nova puts her through. It's just so very strange, and I he just fascinates me.
I'm very curious if Scott Snyder read this before, if he's read this in his lifetime, because Zapan peeling off his own skin, his own face, mm-hmm. It made me definitely think of Joker, the faceless Joker bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of stuff that made me think of other things.
What else can you name?
Well, that, the Doomsday thing with...
Doomsday, monster. Obviously. Yeah, right.
What is the other thing that stood out to me? there's one other thing. I just had it in mind, too. God damn it. Forget now. I can't remember. God damn it. I forget. There's some other thing. I'm trying to scroll through this and hope it ignites my memory, but I can't think of anything.
That's okay.
What the hell it was. It was something that happened in, oh God, I can't remember. I don't know what it was, but I saw a lot.
No idea even what the shape of it was.
No, I can't. It's gone. It makes me upset too. I was trying to remember. Do you want to talk about the art for a bit, Eric? Well, I think we've already touched on it several times, but you want to talk about technique, you know, et cetera, influence.
Good God, I don't even know where to begin. I really don't like the Yukito Kishiro's art in this series specifically. There are other things by him that I've read. I've never read the follow up series, which is called Battle Angel Last Order.
Mm-hmm.
It has gone on for 2 to 3 times as many issues as this. It is pretty much, I think, been his major project ever since doing a couple minor ones in the early aughts.
Mm-hmm.
It's just never grabbed me as much as this. This was him as a young man wanting to prove himself as a mangaka and just hungry for it. And just every page is drawing his ass off. Like I'm looking at just the page right now where Nova is like just sort of tenderly crouching over the box where Ito.
That's it. That's the thing I was going to say.
It's not 7, is it?
Yes, 7.
But just like him tenderly crouching over, like this, the subtlety, the softness of that. And like, he's a terrifying character. He opens this box and it's Ito's head that's just in pieces. Like his mm-hmm. jaw is ripped off and turned around backwards, and there's pieces of his brain. And it's this character that we've spent so much time with. We've spent almost 5 whole books with Ito, and we've really gotten to know his character, and we've seen his flaws, and we've seen a little bit of his dark side. And, you know, he's just very softly, very calmly, like, Ito is inside this box. And just, like, the subtlety of that art communicates so much of that. I have just drooled over these pages for years and copied drawings out of them as a kid. And it's just, I could talk about, I don't know, should I actually get technical? I could continue to gush, but I feel like this is just sort of going nowhere. It's just a big circle jerk. But
it's okay.
You want to hear?
I don't know.
What do you think is valuable?
I was just curious if you had a, there's anything in particular that, I mean, we talk about, I don't know.
Well,
do you see this in like, it contextually, where is this an important thing, or is it just struck you individually, or in the greater context of manga and comic artists?
I don't know that other people, like, I'm sure Kishiro has his following, but this was never a huge book. I feel like he is a tremendous artist. Like, when I look at, like, the figures, like, there's such a solid understanding of, like, these characters and their, like, their dimensionality, their position in space, their perspective, you know, and they're drawn in interesting and dynamic ways. You remember, you know, we would read some McNiven books where he's using interesting, like, angles and perspective. And Kishiro does that, and it's very, very challenging. He does it and makes it look easy. It's remarkable. You know, his characters are incredibly expressive, to the extent that a lot of them, they sort of blur the line of being more realistic and being more manga cartoony. But they, I don't know, it communicates a lot. And I could literally watch him, like, crosshatch like a giant page of rocks, and it would be the most interesting looking thing I've ever seen. Even his individual marks look just beautiful to me. Do you know the underground comic artist R. Crumb, Robert Crumb?
Yes, I know R. Crumb.
His mark making is very R. Crumb-esque to me, which it endears him to me even more so. But of course, I discovered Yukito Kishiro before Crumb, so it's kind of the other way around. But I mean, like, these environments and the machines and the figures, and, you know, he's the kind of guy that'll draw the inside of someone's head, you know, like here's what a person looks like with their brain taken out. And you're like, yeah, that's probably what it looks like. Here's this disassembled revolver. Here's a person having their chest, a person that's a robot having their chest taken apart, and just absolutely crushes it. Just every time. I don't know. It's the most beautiful thing I can think of. Oh, Rocket Hammer is back at the end of the book. She waxes a pan with it.
Oh, good.
Rocket Hammers like him in the face.
I do like Zapan a lot too.
Yeah, he's a fucking, oh my god, he's a scumbag. And that whole,
I can't remember my face.
Yeah, that's that whole bit's so effective. To where he's like, brain, what do you want? And it just, revenge. Oh my god. This shit gives me chills. And then the berserker body takes him over. I'm very glad that that's where they stopped, because it's, I don't know, that's such a fascinating fight where Alita is just like, well, I'm pinned down. Time to chop myself in half with the sharpest knife in the world.
Jesus.
God almighty, she fucking fights him with one arm and no legs. She's such a fucking badass. It's amazing. And a gun that's fucking bigger than she is. God almighty. I've asked you nothing about this.
We are. So I've enjoyed it. I'll give you my. I'll leave my general comments, and then we can wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm really interested to know.
I've enjoyed it. The art is very good. The action in particular, so kinetic, so effective. I think I was saying, it made me think of, like, every time I think of, like, really effective kinetic action, it makes me think of Frank Miller's Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of that. Like, it, their art styles are not similar, but the, just the fact that it delivers, you can see it, like I said, cinematically, it delivers, you know exactly what's happening. It really makes you feel the violence and the movement and the speed.
It is incredibly violent.
Yeah.
It is one of the most violent books I've ever read.
It's really, it's interesting. I think the storytelling is effective. Not great, but I like it. It's certainly not Meta Barons, where it's just like, bananas thing happening. Hey, another bananas thing happening. I like the characters. Flawed. The characters, right. I think the characters are solid, and you feel, I certainly feel for them, even though Hugo, he sucks. Hate Hugo.
No, it's okay to hate Hugo.
I hate Hugo so much.
He's terrible.
He's terrible. He
gets his head chopped off, and
he does.
Fucking robot. He's really gross looking.
I wish he had stayed dead, but I was happy he died a second time too. Yeah. No, it's really good. I do like, I'm looking forward to see what happens. I can't help but like death sports. Futuristic death sports are always fun. I wish that as good as the action is, like as fun as it is, like how good, I mean, obviously it's such a strength of his artwork that it's hard to argue against it. I wish there was more slowness. Like I wish there was a little bit more dwelling in scenes occasionally.
I think you get more of that. I mean, at this point, like I said, he was pretty young. I don't know how young he was, but he was pretty young when he was doing this. He was pretty green. And I think that he was obviously well on his way to being a top shelf manga artist, but I think was still a little raw, even through the last of these books. Like when you look at book 5, there's some corny stuff in there, and I don't know how much of it is, I don't know how much of it is translation. Like I don't think he actually picked out a passage from Leviticus and put it in there. Right. Like it might have been a fucking haiku or something. I have no idea. But obviously I think that Scapegoat kind of doesn't work. I think that was tacked on for an American audience. I don't think they would have. I feel like it's contextually it would have been lost on them. But he was clunking around, and 6 through 6, 7, 8, and 9 are much more focused. They're certainly better stories. The things that they introduce are dark and interesting, and I don't know, some of my favorite comics ever. I'm really excited to get into them. I love Joshigan so much. It's a good punctuation.
Cool. Yeah, I think it's good punctuation for at least this. We are. I think that we can wrap discussion at least on the first half of this week. We can, of course, we're going to delve into this more next week.
Yep,
we're going to finish it up with 6, 7, 8, 9.
Mm-hmm.
Talk more about brain chi. How important that is. Brain chi is very important. Brain chi. That too. That's also present in this book.
Yeah.
Brain chi and brain cheese.
Yep.
So yeah, next week, folks, read 6, 7, 8, 9, where I turn a corner and suddenly hate the book and make fun of Eric for him liking things.
It's okay. I don't think it will not change probably my won't. Opinion on this.
I know
this,
it won't.
This thing that is fundamental to who I am.
I know. I'm just teasing.
You tease.
I know. So we can wrap it up with that, folks.
Yep.
Call it a day, as it were. Mm-hmm. But we are
it's
the
Hansboys
Comics Hour. You can find us at HansboysComicsHour.com, Facebook, Facebook.com/HansboysComicsHour, Twitter at HBC Hour. Emails, HansboysComics@gmail.com. Like us, follow us, any of those places. And of course, if you like the show, please follow, rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes. Really helps us out, really helps new people find us. And of course, tell your friends. We love to see new people listening. You can find me online at MixersMasterSheryl. It's MIXMASTER. You can find me online on Twitter at MixersMasterSheryl. It's MIXMASTERCREAL. Eric, where can they find you online?
Going to keyword bonus there.
Yep.
Log on to the internet and go to keyword bonus. You can You can see my portfolio. I'm almost still using the same voice. You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. You can see almost all the other things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. That includes my Tumblr and my Pinterest. You can also tweet right the hell at me. I won't even see it coming by going to Mr. Bad Example, spelled MR Bad Example, on the Twitter.
With that, folks, we call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.